Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by Dragonmount.com.
But he could, if he's tapping it from Morden, as opposed to doing it himself.
I think Samael was pretty buff.
I haven't really thought about that part of it, but I guess that would probably be true. I mean, that would be the most dramatic, to have them not fighting side by side, but instead of having two separate areas.
Rand has people around him that are really good generals. Matt is a good general. Ruark is, you know, really commands the IO really well.
I think so. I do think that Lon will survive the last battle. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 14th episode of the Wheel of Time podcast, The Fourth Age. I'm Carrie, and joining me this week is Jason.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening to our podcast. The Wheel of Time is a fantasy series written by Robert Jordan. There are 11 books currently and one prequel novel. Mr. Jordan is currently working on book number 12, which will be, and he has said it, will be the final book in the series, except for possibly two prequel novels.
And hey, everybody, I'm Ben. This week, Jason's going to be going over chapters 31 through 39 of The Eye of the World. Carrie's got some listener feedback, and I have got a pretty crazy theory. We're also going to be talking a bit about one of the most mysterious characters, and I definitely agree with that, one of the most mysterious characters, Varen Mathaway, will be our character of the week.
Start this week, as Ben said, I'm going to talk about reading chapters 31 through 39 of The Eye of the World. We left off with the characters in some pretty tight predicaments, and we're going to start off this week talking about, in chapter 31, Rand and Matt on their journey to Camelin. That they do start out on their journey by sleeping on the ground, and it does start raining. They don't like that very much. I don't think anyone would. So they decide to try a farm. You know, maybe they can work, and maybe get some room and board. They meet the Grinwells. One of the Grinwells is Else, who does have a small part to play here. She does have a bigger role in the books that follow, and we'll talk about that in retrospect then. Miss Grinwell feels suspicious of Rand and Matt, and specifically about Rand's relationship with Else. She is happy to see them both go, but not actually before giving them both a good piece of advice. She does suggest that they play the flute and juggle at the inns to try and get room and board, which they do continue to do until they arrive at Four Kings, where they do it there. But when they get at the Four Kings, they arrive at an inn. They do mention that it is a little that it's tougher to get their room and board for just playing. They notice a nobleman starting to stare at them, and the scene plays out where everything seems to be going okay. The crowd is a little bit more rowdy, and that nobleman just keeps staring at them. And once they're finished playing, they notice actually that the nobleman is the only person that's left, and they ask the nobody to be sent to their rooms so that they can, you know, get some sleep, and they do. I mean, they get led back into the rooms, and they really feel as if they're going to be robbed. They feel like something shady is going to happen. So as soon as they get in the room, they actually find something to lock the doors. They lock the door, and as they're trying to find a place to go, as they're trying to find some way to get out of the inn, they can't because it's barred, and then they notice people are starting to try and burst into the door. It's a real moment of panic, and I think at that point, Rand destroys the room with lightning. Not knowingly, he's actually channels the lightning and destroys the room. He almost blinds Matt, who later does recover. They take their things, they leave, and as they're leaving, they look back and they see people on the ground. They believe that they're dead. In the next few towns, Rand has a dream that he's back at Four Kings, so he does retrospect on that, and Baalzamon is there. He tells Rand specifically that Rand is his. And when Rand wakes up, he finds that Matt's also having a bad dream. The next village, Rand gets sick all of a sudden, which is a reaction to his channeling with the lightning. And instead of the innkeeper telling everyone that there's someone sick, he actually lets them sleep in the barn. When they wake up the next morning, this is really memorable to me. A woman enters the stable, and she's wearing green, and she almost looks like an Aes Sedai, and they think she is. She lunges at Matt with a dagger, but Matt does get the better of her. And Matt is holding the dagger to her throat. Rand asks him not to kill her. They do let her go. In the last town, they see a fae looking for them through the shadows. He's asking, I don't know if I remember, don't remember if it's innkeeper or if someone else, But they do see a fade that's actually looking for them. At this point, we're introduced to Queen Morghese and Elida from one of the people in the town. We're also introduced to some family structures. Family structures specifically being how the family works with Elida and Queen Morghese and Elaine and everything along those lines, and Galad and Gawain. They finally arrive in Camelin. In the city, they find that people are wearing red or white. Rand wants to hide the heron on his sword because people keep giving him odd stares. So yeah, he goes into a shop, and just by chance, he picks up the red with the white wrap. They arrive at the Queen's Blessing, which is where Tom told them to go prior to Tom making them believe that he was dead. Master Gil, who's a good friend of Tom, gives them their rooms and talks about them a little bit more. In the Queen's Blessing, we're introduced to Loial. It's a very memorable scene to me. During their conversation, Loial tells Rand that Rand is Taveren. This is where we're really introduced to the term Taveren, and I started to suspect that there's more to the story than just random farm boys, you know, having these adventures. It really seems like they're part of something big and part of all the events that happen in the world. At that point, we go back to Nynaeve, Moiraine, and Lon. They find the White Cloak camp that Egwene and Perrin are prisoners in. They plan their rescue, and they do rescue them, the both of them. And at one point, Lon is going to go back to Nynaeve. Moiraine really nails him down and starts telling him all these things. Nynaeve comes back, though, before Lon has a chance to decide which woman he's going to keep. That's a very important, especially when we get back to the later books, a really important part and foreshadowing of what may happen in the future. Going back to Rand, that was really quick. And then going back to Rand and Matt, Rand decides that he wants to go see Loghain. Matt does stay in bed. He is sick still with the dagger, which we find out later. Rand finds out that the colored wrap that he chose, it's actually symbolic of support for Queen Morghese. By chance, he picked the right one, like I said. Rand finds a wall to watch for Loghain, and he climbs up the wall. And as he looks at Loghain, he wonders why Aes Sedai are watching him. And then Elaine, who we find out later, answers him from a tree. He gets startled and he falls backwards on the other side of the wall, and he actually ends up knocking himself unconscious. I'm going to stop there because chapter 40 actually has a lot of information, which I'll spend a little bit more time on. What do you guys think of chapters 31 through 39?
I loved those parts of the books, like that whole Camelin and the whole thing. It's also neat because it's kind of like the red and white, which one to pick and all that stuff. It's kind of like an early introduction to all the politics that we see later in the books in the series. Boy, there's so much of it later on, but it's just like a small little part of it.
Yeah, it's very consistent. Like in Kyrian, you know, whenever they go there a bit later on, in I think it's book two, they go to Kyrian, and you know he's got to talk with all these nobles and lords and all this stuff, and you know it's all so, you know, complex and so confusing. Mm-hmm. In Andor, you just pick a color.
You don't have to play like as much of the game of houses.
Great thing about Andorans is, you know, you just where you stand with them.
Yeah, it's kind of neat too because it reminds me so much of Matt, like how Rand picked, he was just going in, just like you said, to wrap a sword because he didn't want anybody to see the heron on it. But it reminds me so much of when Matt goes to get the ring, and he's just looking at the ring, just, you know, for the hack, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
because he's just trying to avoid, and he puts it on, and then when it's clear to go, he can't get it off, and that ring is so important, and it just reminds me of Rand when mm-hmm. he does that, and he gets so many things, like.
Really memorable scenes.
Yeah, so I'd like to say thank you to Jonathan. Because we're going to do some listener feedback, and Jonathan sent the voicemails.
Hi guys, this is Jonathan Shelton, and I have a crazy theory for you. I was reading the fifth and sixth books, and I think that Ulver is Gaedal Kane. I noticed it when Birgit said that Gaedal Kane had been reborn, that he was a very ugly child, and then Matt just happens to find Ulver, and Matt and Birgit kind of develop this weird relationship. Ulver's a very ugly child, they say, and with the way time works in Teleron Riyadh, you know, it might not make that much difference that he was still in the dream world while Ulver was still alive. So I don't have a lot of stuff to back it up. This may have been revealed more in the 10th and 11th books, but that's just what I think. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Actually, that's a theory that I think a lot of people who read the books actually believe. I know I myself thought that for sure. I didn't have any doubts. I thought that Ulver was Gadol Kane. And did you think that too?
I definitely did. There's just so many. I mean, he brings up a good point. They do have a weird relationship at first. And when I was reading the books, I thought to myself, well, why? Why do they have a weird relationship? And then, you know, looking back on it and knowing what we know now.
We don't want to burst anybody's bubble, but for those of you who don't know, Robert Jordan has actually dismissed that theory. He was at a Crossroads of Twilight signing in Dayton, Ohio. And the question was, is Ulver Gadol Kane? And we have a quote right here, and Robert Jordan replied, no. I didn't really think that this would last as long as it has. The timing is wrong. He has another reason for being there besides being a red herring, though. So it's kind of interesting that he has another reason for being there, but it obviously puts an end to that theory. So.
Yeah, it's a good theory. You know, I wouldn't even call it crazy. I think that's a very, very logical theory that it doesn't get too far out of line. It's just that it got vetoed by mm-hmm. the one who's in charge of the series. So
the creator himself.
So it's a very good theory, but just you know, didn't get backed up. And I think after that theory, which wasn't so crazy, we will go into a theory that is definitely a little crazy. I think that I can anticipate what both of you guys are going to say about this. I know what I thought about it. I took this from a small forum post. This guy was responding. He was way down the list, and they were talking about Pod Unfane, but he actually took it sort of a different way. They were talking about Pod Unfane in the post, and he just sort of blurts out that he thinks Pod Unfane's compulsion, his fever, his drive to find Rand, is due to the fact that he has read a dark prophecy. And that dark prophecy is that the Dark Lord in the Third Age is going to finally defeat the Dragon Reborn and create his own, you know, create the universe in his image, remake the Wheel of Time and do all of that. So, he thinks he's gotten this from a dark prophecy. He backs this up because whenever he was in his cell at in the end of book one, at the start of book two, I think is that when he breaks out in the beginning of book two? Well, he breaks free and Rand goes down there because he's concerned about Egwene, and he finds the blood prophecies written by Trollocs, and there is one written in a human hand, which could be either a Fade, Shadar Haran, or Pod Unfane himself writing those prophecies on the wall. Well, he thinks it's Pod Unfane, I'm inferring, and that he has, because he's seen that, has concluded that he's heard more of the dark prophecies that he wrote on the wall, that he's heard that, you know, there's been some dark prophecy. I don't know who would actually be performing a dark prophecy, maybe a Dreadlord or something, but the prophecy is the Dark Lord wins, and that's why he is so driven to get Rand, because he wants to get in good with him, with the Dark One, and that's where his fever and his compulsion comes from. So, I totally disagree. I think the book makes it pretty clear that the Dark One took him into a dark closet and did horrible, terrible things to him, and sort of changed his, you know, sort of put it into his mind that it's sort of a weird type of compulsion you know, like the Forsaken use, but it's like at a different scale. It's a lot more powerful and more influential, longer lasting, which would make sense if the Dark One did it to you, So I think his theory is wrong. What do you guys think?
Well, part of what Pod Unfane, especially in the first part of the second book, it does explain that a little bit more. Pod Unfane, not only can he does he sense, but he senses and he can point out and he can see Rand, Matt, and Perrin. When Rand is, and I talked about it a little bit, when Rand goes up to the in the first book, there's called the Beggar. And I didn't go over this in my outline, but I'll go over it now. When Rand is goes to see Loghain, he actually ends up going first right to where everyone is, and across the street he sees a beggar who ends up being Padan Fain. Not at the time, we don't know that, but the beggar points to Rand and he crosses the street. Rand actually runs and flees from him. We find out actually, yeah, that's Padan Fain, and that Padan Fain actually has this ability that was given to him by the Dark One to point out and to know where the three boys are at all time. It kind of fades over time a little bit. It's not as strong as, you know, pointing and saying that's where he is, that's who he is. But it is something that's given to him by the Dark One. I don't think it's something that he inferred by reading a prophecy. So I don't think it's true. Yeah, and that actually that was pretty quick. That put that crazy theory to rest. So starting this week, we're going to spend some time on, as Ben said, one of the most mysterious characters, who is Varen Sedai. She is of the Brown Aja. She plays the role perfectly. The role of the Brown Aja. She's always studying. She seems to be off in another world, but there's something very perceptive about her. Throughout the books, Varen always seems to know everything that's going on without really paying attention. It really seems to be the mantra of her. She always seems to have more of a hidden plan than really anyone else. Myself personally, I must admit, when I first read the books the first time and the second time, I didn't really like Varen at all. She seemed really rather annoying to me, so I didn't gloss over and not read, but I really didn't pay too much attention to the scenes that she was in until I looked into it a little bit more starting on my rereads. There's a lot more to her than people think. I don't think there's any denying that there's more to Varen Sedai than everyone and anyone really thinks, except for the conspiracy theorists, of course. What do you think?
Yeah, that's true. It's the same thing. Varen's not one of my favorite characters, but at the beginning, I just kind of thought, oh, yeah, she's just another Aes Sedai. Nothing really that special. And then as you get into the books, like, a little further, later on, you realize, like, she does some things, and you know, in her, she mentions different things that she's done and that you never hear of other Aes Sedai doing unless they're Black Aja. So it kind of makes you wonder, you know, different things, what's going on with her. So when you do reread them, like you said, it's nice that you can pay a little bit more attention to what she's doing so you can get a better read on her character.
Yeah, a lot of people think Varen is Black. A lot of people really, really convinced Varen is Black Aja. I certainly don't think she's Black Aja.
No, I don't think she is either.
Jason, you think she's Black Aja?
No, and the reason why I don't think so is because there was one point where she had the opportunity to poison Cad Swain, and she did, and if she was Black Aja, she absolutely would have.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I've got a few other ones. Her little, this is the most telling evidence, in my personal opinion, is in book, I think it was 11, she was doing, it might have been 10 or something, but she was doing what I call good compulsion. She, like, puts the thought in their mind, but she doesn't force them to do it. We got right inside Varen's head, you know. We got to see it from her point of view. And we've heard from many, many Black Aja characters from their point of view. A Black Aja point of view is not nearly... a Black Aja point of view is very self-absorbed, very... always thinking about their personal power, always thinking about advancing in rank. That's always the way Robert Jordan writes them. In Varen, she's thinking about other people. She's trying to sometimes manipulate them and get what she wants. She wants to get free, but she's also thinking about Rand and how she can help him. She's thinking not about becoming the rich, powerful, you know, one that's going to strangle them by the throat and, you know, wield power forcefully. She's thinking about, you know, just continuing on, continuing to do what she does, which is very Brown Aja of her. So I think that, to me, that was the most telling piece of evidence that she's not. Just from reading her point of view and seeing exactly how contradictory it is from, you know, Rid Semirog's point of view or something, or Leandrin, and just see how totally different they are. The wording is totally different. It just has a different feel to it, different tone. And to me, that's pretty strong evidence.
Yeah. It seems kind of like she's, Robert Jordan's doing is making her like a red herring that maybe she is, because she uses compulsion in things that you only really hear of the other side using. But it could possibly be, there's a few things about her maybe saying a lie or touching the source and different things like that where she wasn't supposed to be able to. But it maybe could be the opposite. You know, maybe she's not doing it for all the reasons you just said because she's black, Aja, but maybe because, you know, she's on the side of good. And so sometimes you have to go and break a few rules to get things done and make sure that how many people are going to be hurt or killed if, or worse, if the Dark Lord gets free and wins. So she has to make sure that that doesn't happen. I don't know, that's kind of what I think. Not her alone, but it seems almost like she is.
Which is cool. That's one of the reasons I really like Varen. Instead of a lot of people who a lot of brown Ajahs who just want to study it, she's interested in it, and that's what draws her to it. But she's actually going out there and trying to affect the outcome, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like in Dumai as well, she charges into the battle. She didn't just study it and like, oh my goodness, let's observe the men channeling or whatever, you know? She's actually in there fighting. So I like that about Varen. She's actually in the action.
And Carrie, you touched on a specific point that a lot of people bring up when it comes to Varen. It was actually in a setting, and they asked her to tell. I'm just reflecting. I believe they asked her to tell if there was something wrong with the guy that came in, and she laid his hand on his chest, and she said I think the exact quote was, "The man had no soul." How could she tell that if she wasn't able to
channel? Because he was the one that was in the ways, right?
He came out of the ways, and they asked her if there was anything that could be done. I don't think necessarily that that's any clues to that she's Black Aja or anything else. I just believe that that's a thing that, just like the Aes Sedai don't feel the cold, and they don't feel the cold because they're channeling the power. It's just something that they learn how to do. So I think that's just a talent that Aes Sedai naturally have that doesn't actually have anything to do with the power.
But, you know, it could also be something like simple, because we had learned in Crossroads of Twilight when Rand went, with the Winter's Heart when Rand went and, and they had the wells. They spoke so much of using the wells, like Nynaeve's belt and, all that. And so, perhaps Varen has a well of her own, and she can use it to tap into a little bit of source to do some deviling. Isn't that what they call it when they're just checking to see how you are when they're healing? So
that makes sense.
She could have something like that too. There's a lot of different things that it could be. It could be just a sense, like a sixth sense, kind of like or she could have some superpower. It doesn't have to be evil. It could be sent. I mean, if the Dark Lord can have and give people special abilities, why can't the creator? We never hear of somebody actually being sent from the creator, right?
Well, not actually sent from the creator, but we do have people with special abilities, like Heron, the sniffer, and Min's viewings. You know?
I just mean because they know what they're sent on a mission. Like Baron talks about her mission, like her 70-year plan or mission or something. What do you know what her words were when she says? She talks about having
effect for 70 years.
I mean, of course there are people with abilities, but nobody that we know of that has actually had some type of contact, not contact with the creator, but maybe like a spiritual contact. And, you know, you have to do this because you have to help, you know, set the path in motion to help us win. I don't know. It's just a little theory. I don't really know if I believe it, but it's interesting anyway.
In a lot of fantasy novels, there's a general motif that there's always someone that knows a lot more than what's going on. For instance, in Lord of the Rings, Gandalf is the person that knows more than what's going on. He, of course, is a major front-facing character. Why didn't Robert Jordan think, well, I'm going to have this person there's always this type of person. I mean, like I said, there's Gandalf, there is Merlin, yes, there's Merlin who always has his hand in everything. Why not, instead of making a front-facing character, let's make it someone that is a big surprise at the end. And the more I learn about Varen, the more I think, well, maybe that's her. Maybe she's the balance for the light side. With, you're right, and the Dark Lord gives all these evil people so many big and powerful powers. Why can't the Creator, or why can't it just be something good that she has? It does seem kind of shady, the things that she does, but...
It could be. I actually just came up with a theory. I thought about saving this for, like, another week and using it as a crazy theory, but I'm too excited and I want to say it now. It just popped into my head. What do you think about Varen maybe have gone into one of those Terran Greal and gotten some questions answered? I think it's possible. I think, you know, she...
She could have got some answers that had leading to compulsion for some way, like, only if all the sisters are united and swear or whatever, and she thinks, oh, the only way I can get that done is if I use a little bit of compulsion, and there you go.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if she was ever at a point where she was had access to the Terran Greal. I can't remember. Now that I think about it, maybe she didn't have it. Maybe that was a bad theory, but it would be very interesting if she had gone in there.
One of the things that a lot of people talk about when it comes to Varen, during the Great Hunt, Varen catches up with Ingtar, and she does make the comment that Moiraine sent her. We learn later in the books, very specifically, that Moiraine did not send her. Robert Jordan has even said that this isn't a misstep, that the discrepancy that she said that was intended. What do you think is the motif, or what do you think are her motives and things behind telling Ingtar that she was sent by Moiraine? When she really wasn't. Do you think that's enough evidence to base that she's Black Aja because she did lie?
No. There could be a lot of... I mean, although I know a lot of people maybe think that, but I think either it's a red herring and maybe it wasn't... Maybe she wasn't... Maybe there's a way around the lie, like a lot of I said, I think that you're telling the truth and she indirectly thought Moiraine sent her. Or there could be a way that perhaps she got around... the oaths, but she does seem to take, I don't know, she really values the oath, like all the oaths, so it's kind of hard to picture her maybe using the oath rod to get rid of them. I can't see why, but maybe she feels she had to do that in order to fulfill her task, whatever it may be.
Yeah, it's possible for her to have another copy of an oath rod. She had one of those little rings that she gave mm-hmm. to Egwene. So she has access to Terran Greal that the Tower doesn't know about. That very well could be one of them.
And she's been around for so long, and she knows so many things that, I mean, besides Cad Swain, I mean, there wouldn't figure that in some point in her life she's been around something like that. I mean, you know, how many opportunities, I'm sure.
I personally think the explanation is a little less complex. I think Robert Jordan said it over and over in the first book, the truth an Aes Sedai tells you is not always the truth you hear. I think that's what happened. I think that Varen is just capable of standing the truth on its head and making it seem like she said something when she didn't. And, for example, whenever Swan swore to Gareth Bryn in Book 5, I was like, how in the heck is she going to get around that oath? She can't get around that oath.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, man, that's sneaky, you know, the way she got around the oath to Gareth Bryn. Varen has been around longer than Swan. I'm sure she can come up with things just like that to stand the truth on its head. So I wouldn't take that little statement for too much.
I'd like to give everyone a reminder that of the Wheel of Time events at DragonCon. You can visit ageoflegends.net for the finalized schedule. You're going to find a lot of information there, including our scheduled live taping of the Fourth Age. We're inviting everyone to participate. If you have any ideas or want to hear anything there, please let us know. We do still have a couple of weeks to go over what we're actually going to talk about, so please just give us an email. Go to our forum. You can go to Age of Legends. You can post in the forum there, whatever you want to do.
And don't forget, we are still looking for some people who might possibly consider being a couple new podcasters with us. We would love to hear some of your recordings. We're looking for someone who's got a pretty flexible schedule, who has a passion for the Wheel of Time series, and the ability to get some sort of recording equipment, because, that's important. So if that sounds like you, then what you should do is send us an email, podcast@dragonmount.com, and keep those submissions coming.
Yes, and if anybody needs to contact us, like Ben said, our email is podcast@dragonmount.com. Also, you can check out our forums, which are located at www.dragonmount.com/podcast. And I'd like to say that next week we're going to do something a little different. Instead of doing a character of the week, we're going to do something called Family Connections, which is just to kind of go over who's related to who and who is not. Is there anything, you know, weird going on there? Because sometimes with between relationships and all the people who are related, it gets pretty confusing. So
yeah, and I'd like to thank Mike actually, who posted the some corrections and some information on it and suggested maybe we talk about that. So I'd like to thank Mike, who posted on our forums. We'll give a shout out to him. He gave us the idea for the topic for next week. So thanks a lot, Mike. We'd also like to say thanks to the different Wheel of Time sites that we use. We use the Wheel of Time Frequently Asked Questions. We also use encyclopedia-watt.com a lot also. If our accuracy or if our pronunciations aren't up to your spec, please send us an email. We do the best we can. We try to make the podcast not so structured, almost like friends talking. That's what we aim for, and we have a lot of people to compliment us on that. Thanks, everyone, for the great feedback. I'm Jason. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. Goodbye.
Take care.
Good night. See y'all.
The Fourth Age Podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@dragonmount.com. The music for our podcast is brought to you by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com.